Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light, the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, David Dubinsky, Man of Labor, was written by Harry Gersh.
The psalmist wrote, When thou eatest the labor of thy hands, happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. In each age and culture this has been repeated. Happy is the man who eats the bread of his own labor. But there were many who labored from dark to dark and had no bread to eat. There were those who had to call upon small children to labor with them, and still there was not enough bread to eat. It was not well with these laborers. Then arose men who brought the laborers together to seek an end to hunger and an end to injustice. These men believed as the psalmist believed, and they did the work of the Lord. Among these was David Dubinsky. David Dubinsky was a skilled worker by the time he was bar mitzvah, a master baker when he was 15. In America, he was a sewing machine operator, and then a clothing cutter. For the past 25 years, David Dubinsky has been president of the International Ladies Garment Workers Union.
Now, wait a minute. Can we have a little order? Please. Now, look, Mr. Cohen, at least we can agree on this. Let's have a little quiet. We're not getting anywhere this way. Will you agree to arbitration?
Now, look, nothing was said about arbitration.
That's what I thought.
All right, you want arbitration, we'll take it to arbitration. We're not afraid.
Well, you asked for it. Who will it be?
Professor Martin.
That school teacher? What does he know about business? How about Mr. Ramsey? Yeah.
That banker? What does he know about living on a worker's wage? It's like I suggested Dubinsky.
Dubinsky? Dubinsky? All right, I'll accept Dubinsky.
You'll what?
Mr. Miller, you understand what you're doing?
I'll accept David Dubinsky.
An arbitrator for this contract?
To give a decision on how much raise the union will get?
Look, I know what arbitration means, and I know David Dubinsky is president of this union. But I've known him, maybe I should say I've fought with him for 20 years. I will accept his decision as to what is good for the industry and what is fair for the workers.
So a group of employers, successful, tough-minded operators in one of the most competitive businesses in the country, agreed to have the president of the International Union arbitrate their differences with a local union. A unique and unheard-of occurrence. But it happened in the ladies' garment industry. Perhaps it could only happen in the ladies' garment industry. Perhaps it could only happen to David Dubinsky. He lived in Lodz, in Poland. 16 Bashodnia Street, a small house in a mean street. In the cellar of the house was Bezalel Dubinsky's bakery. Bezalel employed two bakers, so he was called the boss. But the family lived in one room behind the bake shop. Father and mother and one son slept in that room. David slept on a bed of straw in a wagon in the courtyard, except in winter when he bedded down in the hallway with his head in the warmth of the bakery. Each night, he watched the baker at work. That way he learned his first trade. When he was 13, he was a baker and a member of the Jewish Socialist Workers' Bund. When he was 15, he was a union leader. It happened like this.
All right, we still haven't got a secretary for the union.
I nominate Muttle Goldfeder.
Quiet, please.
Muttle, can you read and write? You see, Jacob, Muttle can't even answer, let alone write. The secretary has to be able to read and write. Oh, wait, I have an idea. David Dubinsky.
David? He's still a boy. How will it look for the local to have a bar mitzvah boy for a secretary?
You know someone else in the union who can read and write Yiddish and Russian and Polish? All in favor of David Dubinsky as secretary of the Lodge Bakers Union, let's hear.
All right, good idea, great.
All right, David, you're the secretary. I don't have to tell you how important it is. You can start taking notes right away. Now, brothers, we have to talk about the strike.
I never saw such cold. Why is it we only go on strike in two seasons, either in the middle of the winter or the middle of the summer?
This is a picket line, Jacob, but not a picnic.
Don't worry, I could tell. And if I couldn't, my wife would remind me. You know what she told me this morning?
No, what?
She told me not to walk too much on the picket line because these are my only pair of shoes. Have to save them for Passover. Mm-hmm.
Hello, Abram. Hello, Jacob.
He's here. Dubinsky, the labor leader. What's the matter? You're late for the picket line.
I was at headquarters, writing up the demands we're giving the boss Bakers.
That's fine, David. Don't listen to Jacob. If you came early, he would complain and you were looking for glory. As for being a labor leader, well, I guess you are. And that means you can expect only complaints from your union brothers.
That was his first strike, more than 50 years ago. It was Russian Poland, and no one had any rights. Living was a privilege granted by the Tsar. One morning, right after the strike...
Dubinsky! David Dubinsky, where is he?
David? What do the police want with a young boy?
We ask the questions. Where is he?
How should I know? I'm only the baker here.
It won't help him to run. The shop is surrounded.
Someone looking for me? Oh, the police.
Yeah, the police. Come on.
Well, what's all the talk? A man can't even get a night's sleep.
Police? What is it?
It's all right, Papa. They came for me.
But why the police?
You don't know your son is a revolutionary?
What kind of a revolutionary? My son, David, never.
He's an officer of the Bakers Union.
The Bakers Union? For this you take a young boy to jail?
All right, enough talk. Let's go.
It's all right, Papa. It's all right.
A boy? Jail? But wait. Wait, please, wait a minute. David... David, you'll wear this, yes.
Now? You give me an arbor confess now?
Yeah.
All right, Papa. I'll wear the sacred garment. It will make you feel better. Maybe me, too.
So David Dubinsky made his first trip to jail for being secretary of the Lodge Bakers Union. He went with the arbor confess his father gave him.
Hello, son. How is it with you?
Papa, how did you get into the prison?
Don't be worried, David.
How does one do these things? For 5 rubles, the warden sold me 5 minutes. Also, he agreed not to beat you and to give you the food that the Tsar's government pays him to give you.
But why?
Why? David, if you're old enough to go to prison, you're old enough to understand these things.
All right, Papa. Let's give the warden the rubles.
Now you're acting sensibly.
But not for special treatment. Tell the warden that for 5 rubles a month, I am to receive and send 1 letter a week. We must know what goes on outside, and our brothers in the union must know what we think.
But David, for this you will trade the whips and the hunger of prison? You would take a drunken guard's beating for a letter from your union? You're older than I thought, my son. And wiser than I. It shall be as you say.
This was the beginning of David Dubinsky, labor leader. A memory of a tag of the Psalms from Cheder, the harsh life of a Jew in Vilna. or even a boss's son had to sleep in a wagon in the courtyard. He came to America in 1911, January 1st, 1911, and in 2 weeks he was a real American. He had his first citizenship papers. He was registered in night school, and he had a job as a dishwasher. Then he got himself a card in the International and became a garment worker. He became part of the wild jungle the garment industry used to be before the International cleaned it up.
All right, boys. Be quiet, boys. Here's the garment. See, all straight seams, easy. You can do the whole thing in a few minutes. Who wants to give me a price? What's the matter? You afraid to talk? Or you afraid to work?
25 cents.
You came here to make jokes or to look for work? 25 cents.
Well, that's a fair price.
Sure. 22 cents.
This is Houston Street, boys, not Fifth Avenue. You don't want to work, then leave my shop. Now, who'll sew this dress for 18 cents?
We'll stop sewing a dress like that for 18 cents.
Yes, Salvation Army.
All right, that's all. There's no work here. Go.
I'll take 18 cents.
Don't take it. He'll pay more if we stick together.
I need the work.
Now, there is a smart man. Now, who else wants to work?
Well,
how about you?
All right.
All right, fine. You. Yep, come on inside. The rest can go.
Please, mister, you forgot me.
I got enough.
I need work, mister, my children.
I said I got enough.
I'll work for 16 cents.
Now, there is a man who understands the market. All right, you can come on in. Price is now 16 cents a dress for everybody. Who wants to work?
Those were the conditions in the garment industry. And those were the conditions wiped out through the International and David Dubinsky.
Workers can live in the garment trade now without begging and without losing their humanity. There is a Talmudic injunction that says, the right of the working man has precedence. In a way, we built the International on that line.
When the dark night of humanity spread over the face of Europe like a black stain, erasing not only people but the qualities which separate people from beasts, there were other working men who required precedence.
Hello? Hello?
Well, hello, David. We just had another letter from Paris. The news is bad.
What do they say?
Three more escaped and got through. They're hiding now in Paris. But it looks as if they'll have to move again.
Where can they move to?
Nowhere, unless we can bring them here.
What does Washington say?
The same. No visas.
The secret weapon again, huh? Red tape. And we'll see. Tell the committee we're going to Washington. Tomorrow. I think the first train is 6:30. In the morning, that is.
But the negotiations, they're supposed to start tomorrow.
The dress manufacturers will have to wait until we finish negotiations with the Department of State.
Hello, Mr. Dubinsky.
Hello, Mr. Secretary. Boys, this is the Assistant Secretary of State. This is a delegation from the Jewish Labor Committee, Mr. Secretary.
Oh, happy to meet you, gentlemen. What brings you to Washington?
100 visas.
100 visas? To where?
To where? To the United States. What other places left?
We can't issue visas. Who are these 100 people? What are their names?
Well, we don't know yet.
I don't understand, Mr. Dubinsky.
All right, we'll explain it. There is only one group that the Nazis hate as much as they hate the Jews. Do you know who they are?
Well, I...
Union leaders and social democratic leaders. The Nazis can make deals with communists. But the social democrats will not do business with Hitler.
Yes, that's so.
Believe me, I know that Jews, union leaders, and social democrats have top priority for the concentration camps. Every time Hitler comes near another border, another group of union leaders who are too old
or too well known, or too important to go underground, have to run. By now, we have almost 100 hidden in Paris. It will be 100 by the end of the week. And we don't know how long they'll be safe in Paris.
Granted, Mr. Dubinsky, but there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of decent people fleeing Hitler. They all want visas. Now, how can we give you 100?
When we free Germany and Austria and Czechoslovakia, who will be left in these countries to give leadership, to remind the people of democracy? If we save these 100 men, we can rebuild soundly.
But it's impossible to give visas wholesale. There are procedures. They have to be investigated.
There's no time. Hitler doesn't investigate before he kills, nor does he follow procedures. I personally will vouch for every one of these people.
You, Mr. Dubinsky?
It's not good enough?
Well, it's not that. There's the financial guarantee.
Why, I didn't think of that. With my bank balance... excuse me.
David, the executive board...
Who's the executive board? They came out of the shop like you and me. You don't trust them?
Yes, but...
Mr. Secretary.
Yes?
The International Ladies' Garment Workers Union will go bond for 100 social democratic and trade union leaders.
These men were saved, and others. Sometimes it was David Dubinsky, president of the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union, who had a hand in their saving. Sometimes it was David Dubinsky, friend of President Roosevelt. And sometimes it was David Dubinsky, leader of the Jewish Labor Committee. But there were some who were not saved because they could not leave.
It's confirmed, David. Ehrlich and Alter were killed.
Why? Why? Aren't the Russians fighting Hitler, too? Weren't Ehrlich and Alter fighting the Nazis?
Yes. Stalin is fighting the Nazis, but not for the reasons we are, or the Jewish-Polish Bund is. But what can we do? We are at war. Russia is our ally. That is the overriding fact.
Not to me. There are things I wouldn't even permit the American government to get away with. Shall we crawl before Stalin? Hannah, rent Mecca Temple for the first available day. Notify the Workmen's Circle, the Jewish Labor Committee, and every union in the city that we will protest the murder of Ehrlich and Alter at a mass meeting.
The committee is here, Mr. Dubinsky.
Oh, send them in. Sit down, gentlemen. Sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Dubinsky. Beautiful offices you have here. The ILG has certainly come a long way.
You told me the same thing last year across the bargaining table, but it wasn't for the same reason. Anyway, you didn't come here to talk about our union. You came to talk of Ehrlich and Alter, no?
A tragic thing, Mr. Dubinsky, but they are dead. The important thing is the war effort.
Yes, we have to win the war. I have no fear that we won't. But I worry a great deal about what comes after.
Let me be frank, Mr. Dubinsky. The Russians are a suspicious bunch. We're giving them billions of dollars of goods, and still they don't trust us. But we have to fight together. Maybe they're changing. And your protest meeting will only irritate delicate relationships. This is a time for Soviet-American friendship, not for mass meetings protesting Russian execution.
My friend, the difference is that I've been fighting this war for a long, long time. Much longer than the Russians, so their delicate sensibilities don't worry me too much. The Tsar sent me to jail for organizing unions. Stalin would do the same if he could lay hands on me.
I understand that, Mr. Dubinsky.
Do you know who Ehrlich and Alter were?
Yes, they were Jewish leaders.
Yes, they were that. But the communists didn't kill them because they were Jewish leaders. Heinrich Ehrlich and Victor Alter were the souls of the Jewish Labor Federation of Poland. While they lived, Poland had a chance for democracy after the war. But Stalin wants Poland for the same reasons Hitler does. So Stalin has to kill those who are the essence of democratic Poland.
I can see that I'm not convincing you.
We will protest the murder of Ehrlich and Alter. Heinrich Ehrlich and Victor Alter were murdered by Stalin's executioners. The free world does not know where these martyrs to freedom lie buried. But Ehrlich and Alter do not need stone markers. As long as men value liberty above life itself, their memory will be green. Their names will be sweet upon the lips of every man who can or wants to hold his head upright.
In the years after the war, there was trouble and growth and work. A $90,000 gift to the auto strikers and an ORT school in Paris. $7 million worth of Israeli housing bonds and a 35-hour week in the garment industry. The Star of Italian Solidarity from the President of Italy and a Medal of Service from King George of England.
We've got to get through this correspondence, D.D.
Sure.
Hello? It's Los Angeles. About the piecework clause in the new contract.
Hello? Sure, I understand, but does the Employers Association understand? We'll maintain the rates. You tell them I said so. Goodbye.
Can I finish this letter by myself?
Sure, just say we'll go along.
Hello? Oh, Mr. Rockefeller, certainly. It's Mr. Rockefeller.
Oh. Hello? I'm fine. That's right. It's not a rumor. We're putting $20 million into a housing for Air Force personnel.
With you?
You want the ILG to go partners with the Rockefeller brothers on housing in Puerto Rico? How many million? Yes, I think the executive board will go along. Thanks. Goodbye. You heard, Hannah?
Yes.
We're in partnership with the Rockefellers. Well, why not? Now, what else do we have to do?
Oh, but there's no time. All right. I'll take care of the rest.
Are you sure there's nothing else I have to see?
Yes, I'm sure.
Well, how about the dinner for the UN group?
It's all arranged.
Well, how about the menu?
It's decided.
Deep in the East Side, the streets are as crowded as they were when the ILG was born. The buildings are scabrous and smells as sharp. The teeming ghetto is still a teeming ghetto of other newcomers to the Golden Shore. Where the Manhattan shore bulges the East River, at Corlear's Hook, the slum skyline breaks, and there are great tall houses and trees and open spaces where women sit and children can feel air that has tasted green. There, where the most tubercular slums were, rise the skyscrapers of the cooperative houses of the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union.
We are here today as natives returning to the scenes of our childhood. We are the sons and daughters of immigrants and of this East Side. There were rooms in these houses where the sun never shone. There were rooms in which children slaved over bundles of garments, breathing the foul air. There were rooms in these houses where men and women worked until they dropped. Here on these streets, men and women spoke a multitude of tongues, but all of them spoke the same dream of an end to poverty, of enough to eat, of trees in the streets and homes filled with fresh air and sunshine. Now, 50 years later, the garment workers return to their place of origin. We have wiped out the sweatshop. Now we return to wipe out the slum.
This is an unfinished story because all the slums have not been wiped out, nor all injustice and bigotry and prejudice. But there is hope that we may one day do so. For we have David Dubinsky and other men like him. He is in the mainstream of a river called freedom that began to roll when man was young. He is one of those who enforces the injunction written into the Proverbs. Rob not the poor, for the Lord will plead their cause and spoil the soul of those that spoil them. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. George Meany, president of the AFL-CIO. Mr. Meany.
What can a man say in praise of David Dubinsky that hasn't been well and truly said scores and hundreds of times during the past quarter century? For 25 years, crucial years in American history, Dave Dubinsky has given the International Ladies Garment Workers Union devoted, dedicated, imaginative, and fearless leadership. All of American labor has benefited because this man has dared to dream and to pioneer, and yet has never lost the practical point of view. The scorecard of David Dubinsky's achievements is so long and so impressive that it would be impossible for me to single out any particular one for special praise. Perhaps it is best to talk about Dubinsky the man rather than to discuss his individual achievements. He possesses a rare combination of ability and talent and understanding of human nature that makes him easily one of the 20th century's outstanding labor leaders. He is basically a humanitarian, a man who understands the grave problems of our times in the simple terms of individuals, of men and women, of families. It is people who are important to David Dubinsky, and it is his love of people that has shaped his lifetime of service to his union, to the labor movement, to his adopted land, which he loves so dearly. It is typical of Dave Dubinsky that he never rests on past laurels. Today's achievement to him is just a stepping stone toward tomorrow's goal of a better life for people in a land of democracy and freedom and brotherhood. I count it an honor to call David Dubinsky my friend. I am proud to join in this program honoring such a distinguished American. I trust and I pray that David Dubinsky's years of further service to the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, to the labor movement, and to mankind will be as many as I know they will be fruitful.
Thank you, Mr. Meany. Our eternal light drama today, David Dubinsky, Man of Labor, was written by Harry Gersh. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. David Dubinsky was impersonated by Louis Van Ruten. Others in the cast were Maurice Tarplin, Beatrice Pons, Joey Fallon, Daniel Acco, Guy Repp, Bill Zuckert, John Seymour, and Joseph Boland. The narrator, Norman Rose. This is Mel Brandt. Our program was directed by Parker Gibbs. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Next week, we shall present the first program in the Eternal Light Summer Series, Words We Live By, featuring Mark Van Doren and Maurice Samuel in discussions of great words in the literature of the Bible. Be sure to be with us then. This is the NBC Radio Network.